Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And my co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, November 11th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Top of the day and week to you, Melody.
Same to you. Happy Veterans Day. Banks and post offices were closed, but markets and everything else prevailed today, and so did we here at Discount Gold and Silver. Usually I might play hooky on this day, or Columbus Day or something, but we powered through today. So give us a call, ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Gold today, it took the day off a little bit, 430 to the downside at 1,455. Silver was up seven pennies at 1,694. Platinum was down 13 at 878. And palladium, holy smokes, about time they hit palladium. Palladium was down $58 at 1,691, down 3.36%. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens. That got hammered. Whew. Let's see what the dollar did. Yeah, the gold should have been stronger today. And I just think, with that kind of a day in palladium, it just pulled down the whole sector, the whole precious metal sector, because the dollar was down 0.21 at 98.20. Crude oil was down 37 at 56.87. And the paper markets today, they were, they didn't know which direction they wanted to go into. You have the Dow up 13, 27,694. The NASDAQ was down 11, 8,464. And the S&P was down 6 at 3,086. 10-year yield, 1.94%. We're going to talk a little bit about Hong Kong. It's beginning to get a little bit of out of control over there. And I saw they... some people got hurt. I don't know if anybody had died, but we'll fill you in on that here come shortly. But the Hong Kong market was down almost 3%. And, with holidays, with banks and post offices being closed, government offices being closed, not a whole lot of action. Bitcoin was down 4%, 87.12. Let's see if there was anything else worth chatting about before we get started, Dave. I guess you wanted to start out talking about our American Survival newsletter. And in this week's edition, you write that speeches this week by several headliners, and particularly by President Trump and Jerome Powell, should be closely watched by precious metals and paper market investors alike. So that's sort of intriguing. And newly reported progress in trade talks and a continuing accommodative Fed policy, those are going to stay in the forefront in the headlines after being responsible for new highs in the U.S. stock market and gold and silver price corrections, Dave. So take it away.
Well, thanks, Melody. Amid sudden reports of a stabilizing economy, stocks hit new highs last week while bond yields pushed higher, particularly a 23 basis point surge in the bellwether 10-year Treasury yield. The 10-year ended the week at 1.94%, hit as high as 1.96, its highest close since August 1st. And that's the day that the president threatened another round of tariffs on China. The dollar hit a three-week high against key rivals, moving gold, silver, and other precious metals into a temporary correction mode. Emphasis on temporary, ladies and gentlemen. Gold hit a three-month low on Friday as positive vibes, unrealistic as they may be, around the U.S.-China trade deal tarnished the metal safe haven appeal. Spot gold was down 0.4% on Friday at 1462 an ounce. It was the biggest weekly drop, 3.2% in 3 years. Remember, however, that the back and forth from the trade war is one of the major reasons that Bullion has risen about 14% so far this year. Gold also has benefited from the Fed cutting interest rates three times this year. Silver also dropped 1% on Friday, having touched its lowest since mid-August, and saw its steepest weekly drop in the same, a little over 3 years.
Well, tell us about these speeches.
Well, Trump speaks over lunch to the Economic Club of New York tomorrow, where we'll be looking for, but possibly not getting, clarity on a partial trade deal. The Fed chair speaks on Wednesday to the Congressional Joint Economic Committee. It's a bunch of talking heads. I was at one of those meetings back in the day. Powell will also appear before the House Budget Committee on Thursday, where he's expected to comment on the nation's growing debt problem. Now, no less than 10 other Fed governors are also scheduled to discuss their views on the economy and, you know, the prospects for further rate easing this week, including Fed Vice Chair Richard Clarida early tomorrow morning.
Boring.
I know, right? Aren't you glad there's no, well, maybe there is. I don't know if C-SPAN covers those meetings or not.
I'm glad I'm not going. But there are a couple of economic reports that are scheduled to be released this week, isn't there, Dave?
Well, the NFIB Small Business Survey tomorrow, CPI on Wednesday, PPI and jobless claims on Thursday, and retail sales, plus import prices and industrial production on Friday. And of course, in Washington, the House of Representatives will begin their public impeachment hearings for the first time on Wednesday and Friday. So far, the markets have seemingly ignored the topic. Whether that changes after these public hearings remains to be seen. But trade is likely to remain the most important question for markets as we now head into mid-November. The calendar's creaking ever closer to December 15th. That's the date on which new tariffs on consumer goods from China are scheduled to go into effect if there's no deal inked between the two nations.
Well, you know what? It's just interesting. I mean, we've had these peaks and you know, these lows, you know, with whatever news is being released in these trade agreements. And I'm sure once the trade agreement with China is finally inked, whether it be phase one, two, three, four, five, whatever it might be, but once it is inked, yeah, you're going to see a knee-jerk reaction in these stock markets. But then what? I mean... Is it really going to change anything? What's it going to change? And that's what no one has attempted to find out or discuss. It's just, oh, a trade deal. And that's the only importance, is that it gets inked. But do you know, Dave? I mean, have you found anything? Have you read anything about...
All I found, Melody, is what you know and what our listeners know. There is a ton, and I mean ton, of economic uncertainty out there, and just about as much geopolitical volatility as, you know, has been, you know, going on perhaps in our lifetime. There's just so much of it. And, you know, with the problem is these computer algorithms that are automated, built into so many of particularly large company brokerage houses, trading processes, that, you know, they look for words, sometimes not even actions. And, you know, so if and when, you know, there is a phase one agreement, as has happened each of the last 4 weeks, there will be at least a temporary jump up in the paper markets, and you know, gold will either, you know, stay steady, or it may correct temporarily again, or because of, you know, if any other of the, you know, literally dozens of other uncertainties, you know, sort of makes its presence known, you know, that could have the same effect of, you know, gold is just one more major event away from this surge up through the clouds, as we've been talking about. So, yeah, that's what I know. Do we know if there's going to be a trade deal? Or, of course not. We don't, and the signals are mixed. But we know that there's a lot of everything else out there.
And then we don't know what's in the trade deal that would make our economy turn around, because the tariffs will go off, right? I mean, we do have tariffs on things, as even before President Trump came into office, there were tariffs on things, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of them weren't 15-25%.
That's correct. And steel had a hefty one, but but the point is, do they come off? Do they stay? How is it going to affect the economy? What jobs are going to be brought back? What type of product? You know, we talk, a lot of it is agriculture, and Lord, oh, I mean, they're talking about, I've seen a weather report on our farmers for this winter and in the Midwest, and it's not looking good. You know, if they're predicting the type of winter they're going to have, it's because all of that, they have so much water, and this cold temperatures are beginning so early, is that it's freezing the ground, and that's going to bring them even more problems.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about farming in terms of trade, in a few minutes. I mean, the summer is every bit as hurtful to these farms in Texas and elsewhere and throughout the country, with long heat waves and resulting drought conditions. And turns out that they're having a hard time now, smaller family farms, getting traditional loans to hold them over and, you know, until the next season.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time. First they had the floods, then they had the trade war to affect them, the heat, the drought, and we talked about how the suicides for farmers are increasing, the bankruptcies are increasing, they can't get loans. That's very troubling.
Indeed it is.
Do we just allow our farmers to go belly up so we can import more?
Well, we know that won't happen. But what'll happen is that, you know, that if we go down that road, there'll be additional farm aid, other things being equal. That just adds to our long-term debt. So that's not a good situation either.
True, and supposedly a lot of those subsidies, the farm aid, it goes to the larger conglomerates. It doesn't go to the family farm, and they get piddlings, you know. So people could say, well, the biggest farmers, you know, the big conglomerates, they do more, so they get more. Well, no, it really shouldn't be that way. I don't know. It's big problems, ladies and gentlemen. Big problems. And I don't think this is one that, you know, to where they have a bad season, it goes away, and, you know, the next season everything's, you know, cooking. I think this is going to be a little bit longer term problem with our farmers. Then if everything else fails and you have property values tank, then even their farmlands are going to be losing value. What a great way to scoop them up by the bigger conglomerates. But anyway, it's these are problems that we're beginning to, you know. And what does that do to your food prices? Even cotton. What would it do to clothing? So that means everything goes higher. Anyway, why don't we just go on, skip down to the controversial country of Myanmar. Dave.
Yeah, the Myanmar expects to attract more investment as manufacturing.
Me and Mayan, tomato, tomato.
Well, we're talking about other Monday news shorts here. So, Myanmar expects to attract more investment as manufacturers seeking to relocate production from China to skirt U.S. tariffs and counter capacity constraints in Vietnam. China and Greece, they've signed a 16 trade-related agreements in sectors including energy, agriculture, tourism, and ports. Those two countries are natural partners, quote-unquote, for the creation of China's One Belt, One Road initiative, so says China's Pres Xi Jinping. And the UK has reportedly dodged a recession for now, ahead of the postponed October 31st Brexit deadline. But the uncertainty from the UK's plan to leave the EU continues to take a toll on its economy. Growth has been stagnating there, GDP falling in September and October. The British economy is forefront in the minds of candidates and voters for the upcoming UK elections scheduled for December 12th.
You know, we talk about it many times in this program, and, you know, but it is interesting that the U.S. historic economic expansion has really not helped that many of the middle class. That, Dave, that really it shows that the one percenters really control, and that's the key word, control, more than half of U.S. equity.
Well, that's absolutely true. There's new data out of the Fed, which anyone can look at, federalreserve.org. Just query, you know, so any of the words in this topic, you know, wealth, economic expansion, or what have you. But age also plays a role. Baby boomers, and this is less surprising if you ask me. I mean, it just makes sense intuitively that, you know, baby boomers had wealth that was 11 times higher than that of millennials. And it's been like that for quite some time. But the poorest of Americans have 36% of liabilities, but just 6% of assets. It seems like the historic interest rates after the Great Recession helped boost the riches of top households.
And we're going to bring that to a wrap when we come back from break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, these programs are archived on a daily basis. You can listen live or listen to the archives. Just make sure you get to the website, dgscoins.com. And, you know, heading into the break, Dave, we were talking about the 1%, and, you know, you hear that dragged across, you know, probably every program on mainstream media and so forth, talking about the 1%ers, particularly now in the election and so forth. But it really is, I don't say it's important due to those same arguments. I think it's important because it's dangerous, because when things happen, when you have 1%ers that control more than half of the equity in the U.S. public and private companies, and when you have, you said going into the break, what, 36% of liabilities, but just 6% of assets?
Mm-hmm.
And we've had the historic low interest rates after the Great Recession to help to boost, you know, everyone's income. I mean, when things happen, then they rise up. Those people who feel that they were left behind. And I think that's why now it's so easy to create the divide that has been created. And I think it's more than just, you know, politics. And, you know, one side likes Trump, the other side doesn't, and, you know, bada, 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 bada. I think it's more than just that. That's just the, that's just the attention grabber. But when you have a group of people that are left behind and can't or didn't get the same advantages, they're going to rise up and show their displeasure. And I think that's my conclusion, and that's my analysis of the thing, my opinion. And so it is dangerous. And, you know, maybe that's what we're seeing in Hong Kong. You know, certainly those folks are, and we'll talk about that coming up, but, you know, we'll discuss maybe the relationship to that too. But and again, I'm not a fan of Jamie Dimon, and he was on 60 Minutes. And, you know, he talked about the wealth gap in the U.S., and he says it's a huge problem. And they're defending their wealth. You know, they're defending their wealth because he was interviewed by Leslie Stahl, and she had asked him if the $31 million he was paid last year was too much. And, of course, he replied it had nothing to do with it. Of course not. He says the payment decision and question whether to return some of the money would solve any of these problems. And, no, it wouldn't. So what else did he say about, I mean, why does he think it's a huge problem?
Well, because the gap keeps getting larger, and it's been trending that way for a long time now. I mean, when you got lower and middle incomes flat for more than a decade, it's been well in excess of a decade, And the top 1 or 10%, you know, who already have a head start in many respects, you know, whether it's, you know, through investing in, you know, the stock market or whatever, it's just that the gap is getting wider. And it, I mean, it's not surprising to see that, you know, that disparity has become politicized. And, you know, and now you've got it to the point where you've got, you know, presidential candidates, you know, like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, they're calling out the wealthy. Some would say that they've targeted the wealthier Americans. You know, Diamond, I think, who generally a little more open-minded and speaking a little bit more to the truth than his fellow billionaires. I mean, he's even feeling, I mean, it's all relative, right? I mean, he's nevertheless feeling, you know, defensive. I mean, he says that, you know, Elizabeth Warren vilifies successful people. And, you know, he says you shouldn't vilify people who've worked hard to accomplish things.
Yeah, but you know what the problem with it really is to me, is with these multinational corporations, these bankers and everything, yeah, they work hard. But on the other hand, all the subsidies, corporate welfare, and I'm back to that, corporate welfare, would they be as successful without getting the assistance that they do from governments? Probably not. You know, maybe things would be, maybe we wouldn't have to where the 1% is controlling, you know, half of all the assets and so forth. Maybe we wouldn't have that deep gap if, you know, and maybe they would allow, maybe things would have trickled down a little bit more. They wouldn't have been able to be globalized so quickly. And, you know, so, I mean, but these are all things that have happened. So what do we do now?
And well, here's the point. I think, I mean, Diamond, in his response, you know, talks about, you know, hey, I work hard. We billionaires, we CEOs, we all work hard. Well, you know what? So do your other employees who make 15, 20, 25 bucks an hour.
Great. Yes.
Every bit is hard. And they don't have nearly the extent of privileges that you have, like the ability to, you know, have
avoid tax
$200 lunches and $300-$400 dinners and ride from one place to another on the private corporate jet.
I don't, you know, granted that they can do those things, not everyone is entitled to all that stuff. If you work hard and so forth and whatnot and you achieve it, that's one thing. But the assistance that they get, like the taxes, they have the ability to avoid the taxes. They have that where to where they can keep more. And of course, we all come back to, you know, the reason it's really hard on the people is because of inflation. Their dollars buy less. They get less of them and they buy less. So, you know, they're not going to get ahead. They'll never get ahead as long as we have the same monetary system that we have. But, the advantages and, you know, and, you know, I believe in the estate tax. I think there should be an estate tax because all their careers, they've had the benefits. They've had the subsidies, the help from governments and everything else to be successful, you know, for their families and everything to become wealthy. So they should give something back. And I remember Bob Chapman, it was always about giving something back. And you're right. We all have to give something back. And so do they. And I don't think these corporations giving billions of dollars to California, it might be a start. But again, what is it really all about?
Well,
Image building? Probably, sure. More than anything.
Yeah, Diamond answers Leslie Stahl, you know, suggesting that, well, me giving, you know, some or most of my salary back doesn't do anything. Well,
he shouldn't.
Give it, share some more with the people at the lower end. There's no reason, none. I don't care if you're the most successful CEO on the planet. There's no reason why the top salaries in our publicly traded companies should be 1,000 plus times more than the average worker in that company. That's obscene. I think it also gives capitalism a real bad name.
Maybe, yeah. This is the, you know, but it, you know, let the, you know, where's the unions then? Isn't that what the unions were supposed to do? Is protect the workers?
The unions have been busted.
That's right. They're corrupt, just like everything else. You know, automation, technology has replaced jobs. You know, you don't have, you know. It is the bottom line. It's all for the shareholder. It's, you know, things, nothing trickles down, ladies and gentlemen. You can go back, you know, how far you want to go back. Nothing trickles down. So, throw away, eliminate all the benefits, eliminate the loopholes in our taxes. That'd be a nice little start. Eliminate the lobbyists. You know, it's back to term limits and everything else that needs to be done. And, but I don't know. I don't know the answer, Dave, but, you know. So I guess the next answer is the next topic.
Yeah.
The next topic.
Hong Kong. Halfway around the world.
Yeah, well, you know, Hong Kong police shot and critically wounded a protester, and a man was also set on fire today in violence that prompted the leader, Carrie Lam, to denounce enemies of the people, and drew a chilling warning from a senior Chinese newspaper editor. Protesters threw petrol bombs at police after a weekend of clashes across the Chinese-ruled territory, marking a dramatic escalation of more than 5 months of often violent pro-democracy unrest. And this violence has far exceeded the call for democracy, and the demonstrators are now the people's enemy, Hong Kong chief executive said in the defiant televised address. So she says, if there's any wishful thinking that by escalating violence, the Hong Kong government will yield to pressure to satisfy the so-called political demands, they're making the statement clear and loud that it's not going to happen here.
Yeah, I mean, this tear gas that police fired in the streets of the central business district where some protesters, you know, blocked streets as office workers crowded the pavements and hurled anti-government abuse was seen to be a new turn. You know, a lot of the protests, whether, you know, violent or peaceful, had been happening largely on weekends, you know, when businesses were closed and a lot of workers were home. But these daily protests, you know, are now literally firing up to a new level. It forced some offices to close early. I'm sure a lot of the bigger companies and small didn't want their employees caught in the middle of violent demonstrations, especially now that there's a reported shooting. You know, there haven't, I mean, this shooting reported today is a 21-year-old protester, reportedly alive, critically wounded. But the photographs that are coming out today are stand in contrast to ones that we saw earlier in the early days of these protests. Just a lot more infrastructure, property damage going on now. I mean, and as you mentioned, the Hong Kong stock market, HSI, closed down close to 3% today.
Well, wouldn't you say these people, or are they really fighting for their liberties and freedoms, or would they be a group of people, folks that are left behind?
Oh, well, I think it's probably a combination. The ones who live in Hong Kong, and the vast majority of these people are younger in age. I suspect they see their society changing as they're just coming into adulthood. And I think probably a lot of the protesters, certainly not all, I mean, I think probably different levels of motivation, some of it stems from the income inequality that they're seeing. Others are literally fearful, I think, of, mainland China, the People's Republic of China, the Communist Party, taking away freedoms that they and their parents have known for many decades. And they just different people have different ways of showing their discontent.
Well, I don't think it's only going to be ramping up there, so it'll be real interesting. I mean,
you're right, it is scary.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? We're going to be heading into break in 2 minutes, and I don't mean to go back to the one percenters, but I'm just thinking, Dave. Now, they can't. They can allow that to filter down, because the problem is because of our monetary system, because of inflation. If let's just say they gave everybody $50 an hour, do you know what that would do to our inflation? And what I don't understand, if it's our consumers, 70% of our consumers are keeping the U.S. and the global markets intact, they can't be doing that bad. we can't be doing that bad if 70% of the consumers in this country is still keeping our economy up and blowing. But if it trickled down to them, it would blow inflation off the chart. So they can't let that happen. So they can't really fix that problem until they fix our monetary system. We're talking hyperinflation if they did that. You've had all that new money circulating. If everybody got $50 an hour, everything else would skyrocket in price too. So I don't know. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Lay it on the line, I need to hear it just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
They own a lot of stuff. Financial Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. It happens to the best of us. Ah, well, we've been having a pretty lively discussion today, and it's but these are how problems are solved sometimes, or you get to connect all the dots is by talking, having a discussion, listening to people's ideas, and instead of just following the herd. It's one thing I've never done in my life is follow the herd, and because I'm not going over the cliff with them. So, you know, I'm the one that has my hoofs down in the ground. I'm not going to go along with them. But, you know, Dave, 2/3 of Americans do think that a recession is coming. According to the latest CNBC Invest in You survey, 2/3 of respondents thought that a recession is coming, especially for the Democrats or the younger people. More than 2/3 of respondents said they believe the economy is going to be weak, is going to weaken going into 2020. And people who identify themselves as Republican are far less likely to agree, with 46% say a recession is coming, compared with 84% of Democrats.
That's still a lot of people.
Yeah, but you know what's funny, Dave? Now, come on, you're gonna have to laugh. If we had a Democratic administration, those numbers would just be reversed. You know that. I know that.
So. Well, and this is the quandary that we're in today. That, you know, it's the identity politics, and you know, it just something's wrong with that number. Or somewhere along the line. I mean, we talked last week about the consumer sentiment in recent surveys, and you know, it's fairly steady and fairly high. I mean, there are a couple of monthly blips here and there, but even with, you know, a reduction, slight reduction downward in consumer confidence. The fact that so many, you know, see a recession coming, it sort of scratches, it makes me scratch my head. But, you know, this 46% of Republicans, 84% of Democrats, you know, just strikes me as nothing more than wishful thinking on everybody's part, depending, you know, on their who they identify with. And it's silly.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. If we were in a Democratic, then you'd have those numbers reversed. But I think, you know, I think we are closer to recession. If you look at everything and you look at all the things that we talked about today, and if you look at, you know, just the numbers, you know, John Williams, shadowstats.com, and look at his numbers. He figures them out to where they used to, you know, before they started changing all the equations to make them turn out, you know, more pleasant. And just the flat-out lies that we get from Washington, not necessarily from this administration. It happens from, you know, all these reports and so forth. They're all fudged a little bit, somewhat. The numbers don't add up. It is fuzzy math. You don't have the things that are going on in this country where people are being left behind and are not heading into a recession. We know what's pumping up the markets. We know we have all these multinational corporations doing their buybacks. We have stimulus coming from all the governments around the world, ours included now. You know, the Federal Reserve pumping money in the repo market every night. I don't even know if they hit a trillion yet, but I know they're at least a half a billion. you have them, you know, already buying back treasuries, so they're expanding their balance sheets, buying treasuries, mortgage-backed securities they're buying. So, you know, it's the same game, different day. So you think we're heading into an economy that doesn't have a risk for recession? So anyway, so when, how long, how low, and I mean, these are what everybody wants to know. You know, everybody wants to know when the stock market is going to shrink, and they tie the stock market together with the economy. They're two separate things. But, Dave, what do people believe? What do they think?
Oh, boy. Well, it's hard to say because we're all over the map, Melody. I mean, Yale economics professor Robert Shiller, who's a Nobel Peace Prize, Nobel Prize winner in economics, who has studied consumer behavior in the context of economics, he says something, you know, which to some may seem self-evident, but it's interesting. The idea that we can talk ourselves into a recession is not new. And goes along the line of, you know, the statement, the thinking that news stories get people talking and then worrying about a recession, you know, can that actually spark a downturn? Shiller says in his new book, people tell stories and it reminds them of other stories. Hearing about these economic periods of distress, he goes on, affects people's willingness to spend, which in turn impacts corporate profits, and a decline in profits starts creating doubts in people's minds.
Well, the one thing I'd say about that, that might have been real long time ago, but I don't see the American people, the consumer out there, and we just talked about, he ain't cutting back for anything until it actually gets cut from his paycheck. And then it's a little too late. So I think he might have been right. And I'm not here to argue with or talk about a Yale economic professor. But
well, no, I mean,
I think his argument is that might have worked at one point in time, but and a decline in profits. I mean, when we have these algorithms anymore, I mean, that doesn't even really. I don't know how new his book is, but or how old he is, but.
Well, it's a brand new book. I mean, the thing is, there's the credit card factor. You know, we ask, how is it that, you know, consumers continue to drive the economy? Look at our debt, our personal consumer debt. That's how. I mean, you wanna have an. I mean, the problem is, we live collectively above our means so much so that if, you know, credit card companies would all of a sudden stop issuing debt, no more credit card debt, no more student loan debt, no more automobile loans, what have you. I mean, you talk about jumping right into a recession. I mean, that's to me, it seems, we'll have to look at that, actually, to see how much smaller our economy would be and growth without the ability for consumers to borrow so much money. And this is excluding how, you know, mortgages. I mean, just, you know, more basic consumer debt.
I mean, in some degree, he's talking about confidence. I mean, but that's how our system is run. It's all based on confidence, because if they don't have that confidence, it sinks because it is a fiat currency, and that is all based on confidence that somebody will continue to accept those dollars. Mm-hmm. And so I believe in the world we live in, the debt-ridden world that we live in today, people don't cut back until after something has already occurred. I don't think they create it.
A job loss.
You know, that's, they're going to continue. Now, if we were living with, if we didn't have the debt, and we lived, you know, and they lived, you know, within their means, like you said, yeah, that would have an impact. You're right. But in this debt-created world we live in, no, they're going to spend until those credit cards are closed or they can't pay them and so forth. And then you see the, then you know, I don't think bank runs are going to be the same as they were once were. So they're different. They're going to be different only because we have online banking. And so that means if they need to stop, if there was any bank runs, they'd have to somehow stop it online. That means pulling the plug on the computers. You're not going to have access. You know, you might be thinking you're being smart by doing a your banking business from, you know, 8 states away, but try to get there if you know because you're doing it online. Or having your metals stored someplace overseas, thinking, you know, you're being protected and so forth. But hey, you know, once you can't get there, if something happens and those computers go down, good luck. Good luck getting it back. But anyway, here's something interesting: new graduates. There's new data from the New York Fed highlights how the job situation for recent graduates is actually worsening. While the rest of the labor market, you know, they tell us it's good, fresh graduates are more likely to be unemployed than the base U.S. working population. That's not happened before going back to 1990. While the unemployment rate for all college graduates aged up to 65 is trending lower, currently near its lowest level of this current economic cycle, the market for recent college graduates is bucking the overall trend. So, you know, it's with the backdrop of a robust U.S. labor market, this is an important, worrisome trend to watch because it never dropped to prior cycle lows, Dave.
Yeah, you know, there's several factors at play here. I mean, the unemployment rate for recent college grads has been inching upwards, you know, from 3.8% in May to now 4.4% in September. You know, the government's reported unemployment rate, you know, overall was 3.6% in September. You know, Shadow Stats' John Williams estimates, on the other hand, that the real unemployment, the actual unemployment rate, is somewhere between 7 and 20% when you factor in, you know, the discouraged and those who have just stopped looking. But there's an economist out here, Joe Bruzuelas, who says the reason for the rate up, you know, turning upwards is due to a mismatch of skills. You know, he says fresh graduates are having a hard time because of the lack of experience and relevant education. And that probably speaks to, you know, the trends in higher education over the last, maybe 10 years to get away from the so-called liberal arts education to one more focused on specific job skills, you know, whether it's computer programming or, you know, electrician or plumbing and so forth, Melody.
Well, you know, borrowers currently hold nearly $1.5 trillion in outstanding student loans. I saw numbers that those are beginning to default more and more. Fresh graduates owe an average of $30,000 in debt. And those are the new numbers for that. Well, you know, we're just about out of time, but, you know, we do have Thanksgiving coming up. And, of course, everyone looks forward to Black Friday. That's just around the corner, Dave.
It sure is. You know, before you hand over your money on the day after Thanksgiving, though, make sure you aren't being duped into spending more than necessary, particularly if you carry your credit cards with you, as most Americans do. I mean, after all, this is really a holiday for retailers, not for consumers, and they, as always, have a few tricks up their sleeve. You know, one of the common ways that retailers trick you on Black Friday is by increasing the perceived value with bonuses. retailers will create what's called tier discounts that get you to spend more. You know, basically they rely on, you know, buy more to save more. You know, or a store might offer 10% off orders of $50 or more, 15% off orders of 100 or more, and 20% off orders of 200 or more. You might not actually need to buy extra merchandise, but it can be difficult to say no to those theoretical extra savings.
Well, you know, also free shipping is a popular strategy that retailers use to get you to buy from them on Black Friday. Plenty of stores will offer free shipping with no minimum purchase required. Great way to save money when shopping online. Not all stores will, though. In fact, many will provide excellent discounts, like 50% off or more, but then require you to spend $50 or more to get free shipping. Mm-hmm. Black Friday is practically synonymous with the deep discounts on products that are limited to first customers who grab them in time. That's what Walmart did. I didn't know. I thought when they ran their discounts, everybody got the discount, but they only hand out like three or four or five. And, you know, it's very limited to what they give the big discounts to on their big ticket items.
Oh, man, go to sleep early Thanksgiving night, because you're getting up early on Black Friday.
Just eat more turkey. Take that tryptophan. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on this Veterans Day. We do appreciate you, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.